This week on TSR, we have some good news in the numbers related to the Chinese coronavirus in Texas, but some bad news in how local officials are confronting the situation. For our interview, we're joined by Bill Peacock, who shed some light on the budgetary challenges Texas is expected to face, what it means for taxpayers. And in this week's commentary, Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us why the Easter story can give us some perspective on injustice and the rule of law. Welcome back to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your faithful host, Tony McDonald. You can follow me on social media at TweetTonyMac and find us on the web at www.texasscorecard.com. When we get started with this week's news, I've got Brandon Waltons, managing editor for Texas Scorecard. Brandon, we've got some good developments, good news related to the Chinese coronavirus. The numbers that we're hearing, maybe we're going to see a peak that is lower and quicker here in Texas than we might have anticipated.
Yeah, so these models that local elected officials, state officials, even all the way up to the White House are using to predict the impact of this coronavirus have changed pretty significantly over the past week. You've got the University of Washington, who's been one of the big sources of that, who has been updating their models, and they've refreshed them to show in Texas specifically a big change, not only in the amount of cases predicted, they're predicting far less than previously, but also in the date that the peak will set in as well.
Yeah, well, and the really great development here, as far as I can tell, is that, you know, a lot of these policies being imposed by state and local officials are designed to flatten the curve, right? You know, we want to have fewer cases at any one time because we don't want to overwhelm the medical system. And the way it looks is like the prediction is that we aren't going to overwhelm the medical system, which raises the question, okay, maybe we should be thinking differently about how we make public policy.
Yes, we're seeing a lot more hospital bed capacity than we thought previously would be available in Texas. And that's due in part, by the way, to actions by Governor Abbott to limit non-medically necessary procedures. We talked about that before. Of course, that includes abortions, but also things like cosmetic surgery and the like. That's opened up a lot of hospital space. And additionally, you've seen that peak be moved up. Instead of being on May 6th, as it was previously predicted to be, it's actually moved up to April 19th at the latest projections.
Now, you had a chance to go speak with the governor at his press conference recently. Tell us about that.
Well, the governor is out there right now, and he's repeating pretty much the same lines we've heard for the last couple of weeks, which are that we need to continue these social distancing recommendations. We need to continue following those orders from local officials and from the state. But the question, you know, at the forefront of a lot of Texans' minds, specifically if you're a small business owner or somebody who's been economically impacted by this, is when is the economy going to reopen? And for that, it looks like they're looking to Washington to lead on that issue.
Yeah, very interesting. Appreciate you getting a chance in there to ask them about that. And we'll have to keep an eye and keep pressure up for those who want to see things opened up here as we move forward.
Absolutely.
Now let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with the Central Texas Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Jacob, a lot of these local officials exercising power in the midst of the coronavirus crisis, but some of that power seems to be going to their heads, and you have a story about that.
That's right, Tony. You know, with great power comes great responsibility, and some of these local officials across the state don't seem to be having the latter part too much. You have a Democrat Hayes County judge, Ruben Basara, telling folks on Facebook essentially to report non-essential shoppers.
So, all right. So this is the guy, he's the county administrator, county judge in Hayes County, just south of Travis County, puts in place this order. And he's talking on, I guess this was on Facebook or on social media with some constituents.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually began with a citizen asking him a question on a Facebook post. He said, "I would like to know how you plan on keeping non-essential customers out of Lowe's, people who are just wanting to get out of the house." And the judge replied, he said, quote, "Report it. Call the police in the city the store is located. My order comes with a fine. Take pics. Get proof."
So the complaint here is that there's been a distinguishment between essential and non-essential shoppers at Lowe's, and some busybody is complaining about the wrong kind of people shopping for the wrong kind of things. And how was this received? What was the reaction like?
Yeah, well, the remark raised some eyebrows. A number of commenters one person said, take pics. Are you serious? Another person said, don't see how reporting people who need to visit Lowe's is enforceable. How can one person's visit there be more essential than another's? The judge actually responded, kind of backtracking a little bit. And he said, well, I'm talking about reporting social distancing, even though he was clearly addressing the non-essential customers question.
Okay, so a little pushback, and he's suddenly, this is actually, I think what I'm seeing more and more of is there's a lot of puffery that's going on with these orders where they want to say, oh, well, you can't do this and you can't do that. But as soon as there's any challenge to the elements of things that are unreasonable, they start backtracking. Oh, no, I really don't mean that.
Well, that's true, Tony. And that's what we're seeing as officials across the state are using their expanded power, getting a little happy with it. Pushback is actually working, like in North Texas City of McKinney, where they tried to ban religious services, and a threatened lawsuit caused them to back off that. And so we across the state as citizens need to be extra vigilant during this time. As our officials have expanded power, we need to be extra careful and pay extra attention to what they're doing.
Yeah, I can't agree more. You couldn't say it better. Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks, Tony.
Next, let's turn to Robert Montoya with the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Bureau. Robert, you've been covering the actions and kind of the basis for those actions of Dallas County, which really has had maybe the most extreme, severe response to the Chinese coronavirus pandemic of any major city in Texas. Major county in Texas, major urban area. What we keep seeing repeatedly is that the data that they're relying on doesn't seem very reliable at all.
Yes, Tony. This thing has been very weird. So a couple of weeks ago, we published a blog showing that the models that they were using for their shelter-in-place orders, if you looked at the model, it was very flawed and even said that there are a lot of asterisks, a lot of exceptions, that the data was not complete. Well, now, on Friday, the commissioners grilled Dr. Wong, who is the director of Dallas County's Health and Human Services Department, and he said that they're using a different study, but it's consistent with the other data that he presented last time. So they're still using data that's very similar to the flawed study from before, which is what the county's been basing their decisions on up till now.
Yeah, and it seems like it's been very hard to actually get data from the county as to like what how significant is the situation, how many cases, how many hospital beds are taken up, those sorts of things. I mean, it's very challenging on that front as well.
Yes, I mean, some interesting things. Commissioner Teresa Daniels asked Dr. Wong what the recovery rate is for those who contract the virus, and Wong said, we don't follow that. They don't have exact numbers on it. That prompted John Wiley Price to ask, what is the amount of time when someone's infected has the virus? And he kept asking to ask repeatedly, and Wong repeatedly dodged the question until Jenkins stepped in and provided some guidance. And that's when Wong gave the final answer, which was 4 days, an incubation period of 4 days, which contradicts what the CDC was telling us weeks ago, which was about 2 weeks, 14 days.
Yeah. So the data that they're relying on is not very reliable. And what this really you've seen interesting is that there's now some pushback from some of the commissioners against County Judge Jenkins and the proclamations he's putting out.
That's right, Tony. Erin published an article, Erin Anderson, my colleague, she published an article talking about how on Tuesday, the Dallas County commissioners voted to limit County Judge Jenkins' authority, where he has to seek majority approval from the commissioners before he extends shelter in place beyond April 30th. Up until this point, he had the power to do it without seeking their up to May 20th without their permission. Now they've ratcheted back his authority and expressed a lot of concern about him acting without consulting them.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of skepticism about these orders, and you know, a lot of pressure coming up from the citizens and through their elected officials to, you know, kind of start winding these things down, as the data really is not supporting some of the extremity of the response. Thanks for your reporting on that, Robert.
Thank you, Tony. Stay healthy.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, as this shutdown rolls on, I'm looking at the economic downturn and I've been thinking, wow, we're really going to have a serious budget deficit when the legislature comes back to town in 2021. And so I've been wanting to talk to an expert about that. And an expert I have found, I have Bill Peacock as my guest this week. Bill, you worked for a long time doing research with Texas Public Policy Foundation, now a public policy consultant and kind of a pro on these things. And I figured you could shed a little bit of light on what the state has in store for it.
Well, thanks for having me on, Tony. I'll do my best. I mean, just like everybody else, though, nobody really knows what's going to happen going forward.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's interesting, and some of the things you've written about it, is that the hole that we are in, everybody recognizes, I think, or they ought to recognize, okay, obviously we get a tremendous amount of state tax revenue from oil and gas, which is, you know, through the floor right now. And we get our bulk of our revenue from sales tax. And obviously there's so much decrease in economic activity. We see those indicators, you know, that's going to be a huge hole. That's going to go through the floor as well. But you've been saying, look, there's actually already a built-in hole. We had a hole and the hole is just getting kind of deeper. And I think that's almost alarming just as a place setter.
Yeah, I mean, Tony, we've seen this time and time and time again with Texas government, but also with all government, is that in times of plenty, the government spends all that it has, and it doesn't leave any room for the times of unplenty. When we have economic downturns and when revenue gets tight. And that's exactly the situation we find ourselves in today. If you look at the budget numbers from last session, you know, and we're looking at the amount they appropriated last session versus in 2019 versus what they appropriated in 2017, the legislature increased appropriations by 12%. Right, over a 2-year period. That's about 6% for every year. That's far more than population growth plus inflation. You know, for those of us who think that government's too big, we think it should be actually going the other way. It should be going down. Even population growth and inflation is too much. But they just spent every single penny they had, and that puts us in a pretty tight situation coming into 2021, particularly with this economic downturn we're facing.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're dealing with a budget here, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars that are being spent by the state government. But there's some things in there that you've identified that I thought were really interesting. There's something that's kind of routine, which is they underfund Medicaid, which they always do. And so that hole's there. But then you've identified a second hole in the spending related to school funding that was promised but really isn't, you know, there.
That's exactly the case. So last session, if you recall, one of the largest priorities for the legislature was to spend more money on public education. Right. So we can debate about whether or not that was a good idea, but that's what the priority was, and that's what they did. And at the end of the session, the legislative budget board and the governor and lieutenant governor and everybody else pronounced that the legislature had increased funding for public education by $11.5 billion. So, and it was appropriated or split out in several different ways. One, there was about $5 billion of that was for property tax relief. About $4.5 billion was for just increased spending overall, and about $2 billion was dedicated solely to increasing teacher salaries. So $11.5 billion. But the problem is with all that is the LBB actually made a mistake. It gets a little technical, but essentially what happened was there was a rider in the appropriations bill that said that no matter what happens in all the different appropriations bills going on out there, because there's multiple ones out there, there was the regular bill, House Bill 1, there was a supplemental bill, and then there was House Bill 3, which did all this education funding. And so the writer said, no matter what happens, only this much money can be spent for the foundation school program, which is where the money goes for public education. And that number was $3 billion less, approximately, than what everybody said it was. And so rather than $11.5 billion, the legislature only increased education funding by about $8.6 billion, which, you know, leaves the legislature a big hole in the legislature with a big question about how they're going to deal with this.
Yeah, it's almost as if, you know, you were trying to make household budgeting decisions and you said, okay, I'm going to spend... I've declared that in the budget we're going to spend $11.50, and then you put $8.50 into the checking account to which that goes, and then you go, well, okay, well, what gives? Are you going to move the money, or where's it going to come from? And so now it's a really interesting question I think you've raised, is like, are they going to backtrack on that promise? Are they going to be forced to backtrack on that promise just because of the economic situation? Or whatever is going to happen.
Well, yeah, that's a really interesting question, and we don't know the answer to it. First of all, nobody in the Texas government has acknowledged this problem out loud. The LBB published a correction to its numbers in last September, and noted that the change was increase was $8.6 billion. So we know that's the fact. The question is whether the TEA actually needed all that money to do all the things that the legislature wanted them to do. I'm pretty positive that they do need all that money. And so if that is the case, there's really two things they can do. One, the commissioner of the TEA has the ability to transfer forward some funds. So as you know, the budget is a biennial budget, 2020 and 2021. So they're $1.5 billion short in each biennium. So he could simply move forward $1.5 billion from 2021 into 2020, and that takes care of the shortfall in the first year. But of course, then that puts a $3 billion hole in the second year, because they got to make up the $1.5 billion and then also pay for the other $1.5 billion they're spending. So in that case, the only way to deal with that is, well, the two ways to deal with that is the legislature can just say, sorry, that we're not going to keep those promises, or they just come back in 2021 in the supplemental appropriations bill and spend that $3 billion.
Yeah, but the challenge there is you got to actually have the money, and this brings us back to the revenue problem that they're going to be expected to have. I guess you call it a problem, revenue challenge that they're going to be expected to have. If there is a significant decrease in sales tax revenue as a result of this economic downturn, I guess there is historical comparison when you look back to past recessions in 2009, 2011. What are the actions that can be taken or that folks can be asking their legislators, their representatives to take, as opposed to, you know, the liberal response is always, well, it's a time of crisis. Everybody's out of work. Let's raise taxes. find some way to raise revenue. What are the responses other than that that we've seen in the past that might be recommended?
Well, there's unfortunately, if you go back in the past, you don't have a lot of really good examples because there's really in recent memory, 2003 and 2011 are the last two times we faced what you call a significant shortfall, right? In 2003, it was estimated to be about $10 billion, estimated to be about $15 billion or so in 2011. Of course, a shortfall just means it's a that Texas can't operate on a deficit like the federal government. So it's not like, you know, we ever going to have a deficit. It's just the legislature has to make up its mind if they don't have enough money to spend on the things that people want to spend on. They have two choices: not spend on some of those things or raise taxes. Back in the 80s and 90s, there were three periods where the budget was pretty tight. And in fact, they did what they called, omnibus tax legislation, right, where they raised a lot of different taxes across the board because, as one person I know put it together, you can't just go to one place in the Texas budget or revenue sources to get this kind of money. You have to go multiple places. Since then, what they did was 2003, 2011, they passed bills that restricted the amount of money that was being spent. But unfortunately, neither one of those numbers held. You know, for instance, if you look at 2003 was really the best effort. That's when my friend Talmadge Heflin was chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. Rick Perry was governor of the state. And, this is a great story. Everybody was wondering how Rick Perry was going to deal with this. And the governor has to put out a budget. And they were all waiting for that budget so they could attack the governor for how little he cared for the public and for poor people and, you know, school children, those kinds of things.
Not being generous enough with other people's money.
Exactly. And so it was almost an accident from what I hear. I mean, but what they wound up doing was they just put out a budget. The governor put out a budget, which he's required to do by statute or even maybe the Constitution. He put out a budget with all zeros in it. Right. Zeros across the board. And it left the critics with nothing to grab hold on to because he said, we're going to start from scratch and zero is everything. So they couldn't come after him for, you know, taking this many billions away from these people or that people. So it's a great story.
Yeah, it's a smart approach.
Yeah, exactly, given the world we live in. But in 2003, for instance, they increased funding by only 1.39%. And it was a budget structured so that the legislature could actually live within its means, the state could live within those means going forward. So, I mean, there were some little gimmicks in there, but it really was a bare bones budget. Unfortunately, they came back in 2005 and we had more money than we know what to do with. And so they backspent. Right.
Yeah. And similar sort of thing, as I recall, kind of happening whenever 2011 and 2013 happened. 2011, you see cuts, but they're arguably accounting gimmicks, you know, that bring you to 2013. Well, then we're flush and we backfill it all in. It seems to be kind of the way things have gone.
Yeah, 2011, you're right. They made no serious attempt to actually trim the budget. They just did accounting budgets, and they underfunded Medicaid by over $4 billion in state funds alone. And everybody knew they were going to have to spend that money. And so there wasn't a serious attempt. So the track record for how to deal with this is not very good. Of course, we know the answer from a conservative perspective, from a liberty perspective, is just don't spend the money.
Yeah, don't spend money you don't have. Well, I think we're running out of time. Tell folks who are listening back home how they can learn more about the work you're doing and read the article, a really good article that you just recently put up.
Yeah, the article you're talking about is going to run on the Texan and thetexan.com on the internet. And then I'm writing some about these same things on my website, which is excellentthought.net.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Bill, and sharing. this, a lot of these things, folks are really going to have to be paying attention to this as we move forward, because it's either we actually grow some backbone and deal with this the responsible way, or else they're going to do either irresponsible accounting gimmicks or tax increases like they've done in the past. So definitely time for taxpayers to be on alert. Appreciate you sharing some info on it.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Hey there, Texas Scorecard Radio listeners. Jim Graham from Texas Right to Life here. And I wanted to quickly hijack the show to remind you that every Tuesday and Thursday at 3 p.m. on the Empower Texans and Texas Right to Life Facebook pages, Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan and I will discuss all the latest news from around the state, country, and world. We don't always stay on topic, but when we do, we're delivering you the news and perspective you need to hold your elected officials accountable. Don't forget the Jim and Michael show every Tuesday and Thursday at 3 p.m. on the Empower Texans and Texas Right to Life Facebook pages.
This week, as we celebrate Good Friday and Easter, we are focused on history's greatest miscarriage of justice. Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan touches on what we can learn from that episode, not just about faith, but about the rule of law.
History is replete with examples of judicial abuse and executive power exercised unjustly. Even in our own republic, where we say the law is king, we find horrible miscarriages of justice. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. Yet none in history was more consequential than the trial and execution of Jesus of Nazareth the day before Passover in the first century. Led before the Sanhedrin, the ruling council of Jews, Jesus' so-called trial was an exercise in railroading. The court had already decided he was guilty of being a troublemaker. He had healed too many people and even raised some from the dead. Moreover, he had spoken out against religious and political corruption. The high priest Caiaphas told his colleagues before the trial, quote, "It is expedient for us that one man should die," end quote. Let's back up. Looking back 2,000 years, most people today think the Sanhedrin, presided over it was by someone titled High Priest, was a religious body. It was, but not really. The Sanhedrin was a governing political body with enormous power over the daily affairs of life. It was comprised of elders from the Pharisee and Sadducee political parties, serving functionally as an heir to the priestly judges we see in the Old Testament from the time of Moses until King Saul. At its core, the Sanhedrin was a political body filled with politicians. As such, they were mostly concerned with protecting the status quo and their own wealth and power. And for whatever else he was, Jesus was, rightly, a threat to their status quo. The so-called trial violated a vast number of protections guaranteed under Israel's law at the time. The trial started with a bribe, was conducted at night in the high priest's house, involved no valid indictment, excluded members of the Sanhedrin who might have voted no, and, well, the list goes on and on. They wanted Jesus dead, and they broke their own rules to demand the Roman government carry out the execution. While they were but players in the grand plan of salvation, the Sanhedrin's actions nonetheless serve as an important reminder that a self-governing people must be vigilant against the creeping cancer of corruption. Left to their own devices, powerful institutions will eventually serve only themselves, including the courts. Institutions of government will serve the citizenry for only as long as the citizens themselves provide jealous oversight. With a Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, that's all I have for the program this week. I've gotten a lot of compliments about a piece I put up at TexasScorecard.com. Let's not pretend this is constitutional, about the constitutional challenges contained in a lot of these local and state orders. I encourage you to go check that out if you haven't seen it. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.